Chapter 28. Atalanta. King Iasus has no desire for a daughter. He considers them weak and therefore useless. So when his wife dies to give him one, he leaves his baby atop a mountain to be killed by the elements. Instead, a mother bear stumbles across the child and decides to care for her. She does not grow up weak. Artemis hears rumors of a girl who lives in the forest. They say she is a wild, untamed thing, that she speaks the language of beasts rather than humans. They say she moves as if she's born of the wind, faster than any four- or two-legged creature. They say she's faster than the great huntress of the moon herself. Her huntresses say she is real, that they have seen glimpses of her, have seen evidence of her existence, but that she always slips from their grasp. So Artemis goes looking herself. She finds her bathing in a stream, more woman than girl, dark skin and a tangled mass of black hair. She's built for strength, built to fight, with scars and bruises littering her muscled body. "Goddess," she greets, not turning to face her, and Artemis can't help but admire her audacity.
"So you do speak the tongue of mortal men," she answers. "I had heard rumors otherwise. You know my name. I'm afraid I don't know yours."
She turns to look at her, something considering and judgmental about the press of her mouth and the tilt of her head. "I'm Atalanta. Rumors are often wrong."
"So I see," she agrees,
biting her lower lip to keep from smiling, since she hardly thinks Atalanta will appreciate it. Atalanta steps from the stream, uncaring of her nakedness and every line of her tensed and prepared for a fight. "If you're here to kill me, I won't make it easy for you." She has no interest in killing her. "That's just a waste."
"Race me."
Atalanta falters. "Excuse me?"
"Race me," she repeats. "No godly powers, no cheating. Just you, me, and the forest."
"So you'll kill me if I win?" she asks. But she sounds more confused than angry. Artemis shrugs.
"One way to find out."
They race. It's close. Even though she thinks her life is on the line, Atalanta doesn't waver, doesn't hesitate. Atalanta wins. She glares up at Artemis, defiance and fear filling her eyes, and the goddess just smiles.
"Have you considered joining my hunt?"
Atalanta is her best huntress. She gets along with the other girls, smiles and laughs, and never, ever stops giving all she does, every ounce of effort. She's been with them for over a year when she corners Artemis, the same anger in her eyes as when they first met. "You touch the others. Why do you not touch me?"
"Do you want me to touch you?"
she asks, neutral. Her huntresses are also typically her lovers, but she's not going to require it. She wants Atalanta in whatever capacity she's comfortable with. "Yes," she answers, reckless and brave, an adult, but still so young to Artemis's ancient eyes. So Artemis tugs her close, slots their mouths together, and works on undoing her heavy leathers. When Atalanta agreed to help rid King Oeneus of his mad boar, she hadn't known it would end this way. She hadn't known this would be the story of her exploits, which would finally reach her father's ears.
"You didn't tell me you were a princess."
Atalanta closes her eyes and takes a deep breath before turning to face her goddess. "You didn't ask." Artemis reaches out to tuck her hair behind her ear.
"You must know it doesn't matter to me. You mortals are all the same to a goddess's eyes. She doesn't say anything for a long moment, instead leaning her cheek into Artemis's hand. He wants me to come home. He said he'll give the kingdom to me. He'll name me his heir.
Do you want a kingdom? Artemis asks.
No, she looks away. I have no use for one, nor do I know how to run one. But I want him to give it to me. I want him to know he made a mistake, that my life wasn't worthless, that my mother's sacrifice wasn't worthless. I want him to be sorry.
Her goddess sighs. You know, making you a queen and being sorry are not one and the same.
I know, she whispers. I know, but I think I want it anyway. If only so I can burn it to the ground. It's my birthright. If I destroy it, fine, it's mine to destroy.
That's not very fair to all the people living there. All the people she'll be in charge of who did nothing to her. Who were probably told she was stillborn.
But she is bare-raised. She's a huntress. She's been hurt and she wants blood.
Artemis doesn't chastise her for her rage, her unseemly desire for bloody vengeance.
There will always be a place for you in my hunt, she says, and kisses Atalanta for the last time.
Her position within her father's palace is exhausting. Her father treats her like a man, takes her fighting and fishing and hunting. He hires her tutors to teach her all she doesn't know, saying she'll pick it all up quickly. She's bright enough. But the rest of the palace staff hover around uncertainly, unsure whether to treat her as a lady or a lord or a guest. The tailor comes and makes her a dozen beautiful gowns that she can't fight in, and then the blacksmith makes her armor that's too tight across her chest. She misses her leathers. Huntresses don't wear metal armor. It's too heavy and loud, more of a hindrance than a help. She doesn't like the weight of the metal on top of her. She doesn't like the weight of a lot of things she's being forced to carry. Her father wants her to marry, to choose a suitable king to rule the realm, to choose a man whose children she'll bear. She has no problem with marrying a man, and she would like to one day be a mother, but she abhors the thought of giving up a single ounce of control over what is to be her kingdom. There's not much need for deceptive cleverness in the forests, but she's still capable of it if needed. Father, she says, wearing one of the dresses that strain against her two wide hips and shoulders, not sitting right on her thick waist. Wearing a dress like a princess, like a lady, like someone who can't kill a lion with her bare hands. Surely you can't expect me to marry a man just because he is noble, just because he is wealthy. His sons will one day rule our land. He must be strong so that he may sire strong children. Her father's eyebrows dip together. All his advisors are glaring at her, but she pretends not to notice.
You're right. After all, you got your strength from me.
It takes all her effort not to curl her lip. What strength she did not earn in blood and sweat was gifted to her by her mother, not him.
Let there be a contest, she says, thinking of her first meeting with Artemis.
A race. If any man can beat me in a foot race, he shall be my king and husband. If he should lose, he should be killed for his arrogance. Do you think he could claim your land so easily, father?
He gives a great, booming laugh and claps Atalanta on the back. I like it. Very well, daughter. A race for your heart, and those who fail will be executed at the next dawn.
The executioner grows to hate her. He hasn't been able to sleep in for many weeks. There's a formal dinner tonight, and Atalanta doesn't know what to wear. Does she wear the armor so her father can show her off as a warrior, or a dress so she can be presented as a lady? In the forests, there was always something to focus her rage on. An animal to hunt, a woman to fight. Artemis there, burning as bright as her brother's sun. But here, in this stilted, silent palace, she grabs onto her bedclothes and tears them to ribbons, needing to do something. If you hated them so much, I could have just replaced them, my lady. She pauses, her face heating up. She glances up, and there's one of the servants with a basket of laundry balanced on his hip. He smiles at her, light and easy, and she smiles back without thinking. Sorry. He shrugs, stepping forward to finish stripping her bed. It's your things, my lady. You may destroy them if you wish. Her face and throat feel tight, and she can't cry. Not now, not here, not with an audience. I don't want to destroy them. He drops the sheets, mouth parting. I'm sorry, Princess Atalanta. I didn't mean to upset you. She shakes her head and rubs at her eyes. No, I'm sorry. I didn't mean... I just don't know what to wear, and nothing fits. He grabs her wrists, and the calluses on his hands are different. Not quite the same as the ones on her hands. His aren't from fighting. You are the lady of this house, and the future queen of this land. His voice is soft. His hands on her are soft. His eyes are soft. You don't apologize for anything, especially not to me. You could have me killed just for touching you. It's been a long time since someone has been soft with her. She doesn't usually allow it, even from those she cares about. Wouldn't have taken this kind of vulnerability from the Huntresses or Artemis. Wouldn't have known what to do with it. She doesn't know what to do with it now. I wouldn't, she promises. When he smiles, his eyes crinkle at the corners. You'll want to wear a dress to tonight's event. It's a summer party for foreign dignitaries, and on the surface, the function is to socialize. If you show up in armor, they'll take it as a threat. He slips away and walks over to her closet, throwing it open. My mother was a seamstress, and I may not be as good as she was, but I know a trick or two, and we have a few hours. Let's see what we're working with. Okay, she says, because what does she have to lose? He pulls out a bright red gown and turns away as she gets changed. He walks around her with a critical eye. The poor tailor doesn't know what to do with you. He's too used to trying to make women look small and modest. He carefully cuts away at the dress. He makes slits to the mid-thigh on either side so she can finally move again, and cuts the back wide open so it's no longer too tight across her shoulders. He grabs some thin, golden rope from one of the curtains and threads it crisscross over her now naked back to keep the dress upright, and he cuts the sleeves off entirely. His hands move almost too fast for her eyes to follow as he hurries to re-sew the edges in time. She looks at herself in the mirror, and she doesn't look like a stranger anymore. Her muscles and scars are on full display, her meaty calves and strong biceps, the claw marks from the wolf that tore open her shoulder, and the time she fell down a cliffside and bashed her knee wide open. She's a woman. She's their princess. But she's a warrior, too. She was a warrior first, and she thinks she'll always be a warrior first. Thank you, she says, taking his hands like he'd taken hers. Now he's flushing, and she wants... Well, she wants. I'm sorry, I didn't think to ask. What's your name? Hippomenes, my lady, he says, looking at her like she's something different than he thought. Like she's something interesting and special. Looking at her like she first looked at Artemis after that fateful race. Atalanta, she corrects, squeezing his hands. You may call me Atalanta. Hippomenes keeps coming to her rooms, and she keeps letting him. She's wary of ordering or asking for him, since she's his princess.
She wants him to come to her only if he wants to. He does want to. He shows up to alter her dresses at first, but then, when that's done and he's run out of excuses, he keeps showing up anyway. He's worked in the palace his whole life, so he knows all the people and all the correct ways to do things. Patiently explains to her how to play games in politics, and how to win fights that are so rarely physical. He's teaching her how to be queen, and each day she falls more and more in love with him. Each day, the body count from her failed suitors climbs ever higher. Hippomenes could never beat her in a foot race, and if she takes a husband who doesn't best her after ordering all those men to die, her people will kill her for her deception. She's in an impossible position of her own making, so she turns to someone who has the power to help her. Artemis goes to Hephaestus, because he's always the easiest to find. She steps around the Cyclopses and waits until he pauses in hammering away at a sheet of metal. "What?" he snaps, impatient.
"I need to talk to your wife and sister. One of mine needs their help."
Atalanta may not be her huntress or her lover anymore, but she's still hers. He frowns.
"What does that have to do with me?"
"If I call them, they won't come right away, but they will if you call. If you do, I'll bring the huntresses to Ares next war,"
she promises, because his brother is one of Hephaestus's few soft spots. He scowls, but calls out,
"Darling, Artemis wants to speak to you. Hebe, you too."
"I'm busy," whines the goddess of chaos as she materializes next to Hephaestus. The very air around them seems to get heavy with her presence, and Artemis shivers. It's like being around Hera when she's angry, but worse somehow.
"Yes," Aphrodite says, appearing with an arm draped across Hephaestus's shoulders.
"Eris, you don't visit often enough." Only her brothers and mother still call her Hebe. "I'm busy," Eris repeats, then focuses those disconcerting honey eyes on her. All of Hera's children have her eyes. "What do you want?"
"To unite two people in love and shake the very foundations of a kingdom," she says. "It seems like something the goddesses of love and chaos would be able to help me with."
Aphrodite appears to the young man who has claimed Atalanta's heart, carrying three heavy golden apples made by Eris's hands, and tells him that if he challenges Atalanta to a race and drops each of these apples as he runs, she won't be able to keep from stopping to pick them up, and he'll win both her hand and her kingdom. A servant made king. Eris had been giddy as she'd shaped the golden apples and pressed her magic into them. Hippomenes reaches for them, but hesitates, his hands hovering between them before he pulls them back.
"She doesn't want to marry. I love her. I do. You must know that, Lady Goddess. But she doesn't want to marry, and she doesn't want to share her kingdom."
Aphrodite smiles, because Hippomenes looks almost as if he's about to start crying, but he doesn't take it back. He loves her enough to lose her, and that's what she wants.
"I am here at the request of Artemis, who came to me on Atalanta's behalf," she says gently. "She didn't want to marry or share her kingdom. Then she met you."
Tears fall from his eyes as he takes the three golden apples from her hands, grinning so widely that it threatens to split his face in half. When Hippomenes challenges Atalanta to a race, everyone laughs at him. No one is laughing when he wins. Atalanta and Hippomenes keep the three golden apples on the mantle over their fireplace for the rest of their lives. They rule long, and they rule well.